this episode of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, Ghost Joe interviews Sarah and Rob from the Get Haunted Paranormal Network about their views, experiences, and plans of taking the network to the next level. Also, Edgegrave Dave reviews the new Final Destination movie, Bloodlines. So grab your EVP recorders, turn down the lights, and get ready for an unforgettable episode. Let's get haunted!
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Ghost Joe, and do I have an awesome show for you? You could probably recite what I'm saying by now if you actually listen to me. Anyway, on today's episode, I'm joined by none other than Sarah and Rob, the masterminds behind the Get Haunted Paranormal Network. These two, along with their incredible team, have been making waves in the world of ghost investigations and podcasts and everything to do with paranormal stuff, offering thrilling content and firsthand experiences from some of the most haunted locations around the country. We'll talk about their journey into the paranormal, their most chilling encounters, and what's next for Get Haunted. But that's not all. We'll also tackle a hot topic that's been circulating in the paranormal community, a mysterious clip that some claim features the real-life Scooby-Doo team. Is there any truth to it? Is it just another urban legend? We'll break it down and see if Mystery Inc. really has roots in reality. So this story was brought to me by my buddy Bill Van Vagel of the Land of the Creeps and Music, Movies, Sports, and Stuff podcasts. Definitely check those shows out. They are awesome, and Bill is a great, great host, so you're going to love them. His links are going to be in the show notes. Please check it out and support him. So in the reel that he sent me, they claim that the concept of Scooby-Doo, for those youngins out there, Scooby-Doo is an animated Hanna-Barbera series debuting in 1969 about a group of young people that went around and solved mysteries in their van with their Great Dane dog, Scooby-Doo. Well, this clip claims that it was based off of a real group of teenagers from 1961 calling themselves the Duber Scoobers, who, you guessed it, traveled around solving mysteries in the Indiana area with their very smart Great Dane dog named Jasper. So the reel went on to say that in 1964, while they were investigating a string of disappearances from an abandoned amusement park in Ember Falls, that something went wrong and only two of the four mystery seekers supposedly made it out alive, while the other two were found dead with frozen, terrified expressions on their faces in a hidden tunnel under the amusement park. 8 years later, a hiker was hiking in the area and spotted a large creature with the head of a dog and a collar around his neck with the initials SD. So it sounds pretty crazy, right? And it sounds like something out of a horror movie or a movie or whatever, right? So because it probably is out of somebody's imagination. So let's break this down, shall we? So there is no such place as Ember Falls. The closest I found was a book by author, get this, S.D. Smith. Another is the name of a Finnish heavy metal band, which probably had nothing to do with Scooby-Doo, right? There was no such mystery team called the Duber Scoobers, and the characters were actually based off of characters from the sitcom called The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis and the Archie comics. As far as the abandoned amusement park, there are many throughout the country. One that had closed down in 1961 in Indiana called Playland Park could be what this clip was referring to. However, there were no known documented cases of disappearances associated with it. So there you have it. A fabricated story from the internet. Can you believe that?
All right. So before we get into our awesome, horrible review with Edgegrave Dave, where he reviews Final Destination Bloodlines, which is awesome, awesome, awesome. You're going to love this. You're going to love this review. Definitely check it out. I actually wanted to tell you a little bit about my experience of last week with Edgegrave Dave. So Edgegrave and I had went to go see Metallica. He graciously offered me a ticket to the Friday concert of Metallica. And me and him have not seen Metallica since freaking 1997 together. So that was an amazing experience. But before the concert, I actually wanted to let you know what happened here. So I had met him at his house beforehand and, you know, met his lovely family. I've met them before, but it's been quite a long time since I had seen them, right? So before we went in there, he actually gave me a little bit of a preface or, you know, not even a warning. I wouldn't call it a warning, but he was like, yeah, he goes, you have a big fan in there. So, you know, wait till you get in there. I said, what do you mean? Right. So when I went in there, his daughter, Morgan Edgegrave, she loves the podcast, loves it. She was, you know, reciting things that I had said and told me that, you know, she loved what I did here and what I did there and what I said here, and that she thought this was funny and that was funny. And I'll tell you guys, so I've thought about quitting the podcasting thing quite a few times, right? Because it's sometimes it's frustrating when, you know, you put so much effort into something and you look at the numbers and you're like, man, I'm like, how come I'm not getting the numbers I should be getting? What's going on? It's got to be something I'm doing, you know? And I, you know, after seeing that and interacting with Morgan Edgegrave about it, you know, I came to a realization. Now, mind you, a lot of people have talked me out of getting, you know, stopping talking about, you know, not doing the podcast and stuff. Bill Van Vagel, as I mentioned him before with the segment, he's been instrumental in keeping me going and keeping me motivated, as well as Trebles Garcia from the Paranoid Radio podcast. He's also been a very, very huge supporter of me and the podcast and, you know, kind of telling me like, don't worry about the numbers. Don't worry. Don't worry. As well as Edgegrave Dave and Nat Mann and John Wright and everybody. But I didn't really think about it until I met Morgan and how much she truly enjoys the podcast. And then it came to my realization that, you know what? It's not about quantity of listeners. It's about the quality of listeners. And to have her as a fan, and even if it's only 50 people listening to the show, if they truly love the show and they truly love what I talk about and how I do it and how I bring the message across, that means more to me than anything. And, you know, I just wanted to thank Morgan for that, you know, right here on the air and stuff, because it's because of you that I have like this newfound motivation to keep going with the show. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're awesome. Keep listening. I'll keep making content. If you have any ideas that you'd want me to talk about or anything, definitely let me know. Let Edgegrave Dave know and he'll bring it to my attention and we'll do it. I have a lot of great things coming up for this podcast, including, you know, new people involved and new formats of doing things. And I think everybody's going to really enjoy it. And yeah, so that's all I wanted to say. And here's Edgegrave Dave with his awesome horrible review. Let's go, Edgegrave.
Horrible reviews with Edgegrave Dave.
Hey guys, Edgegrave Dave here. And just like the legendary words of Guns N' Roses from their Use Your Illusion 2 record, it's been 14 years of silence. It's been 14 years of pain. It has been 14 years since the last Final Destination movie. And here we are at the time of this recording in 2025. I just bore witness to the IMAX presentation of Final Destination Bloodlines. And it has already earned a whopping $102 million, surpassing all expectations. And the other thing that it has sure as hell surpassed was all fear. You all know I don't want to spoil anything for you. So here it comes. Here is a blood-lined Edgegrave warning. spoiler alert. Though it has been a long time since the original film has come out, this franchise has been around a quarter of a century, which is unbelievable. And I have always personally found this to be one of the scariest series of all time, because it's not a creature, it's not a monster, it's just death. And no matter how you try to escape your fate, no matter what premonition that you have, when death targets you and death's plan, that is it. And I remember Ghost Joe saying, and this is absolutely true, if you ever see a truck with logs on the highway, we know that we're all thinking of that Final Destination sequel, because damn. But on the lighter side of things, for just a moment, I couldn't help noticing that the title with Bloodlines has been used so much. As a matter of fact, there have been so many times in horror films that Bloodline or Bloodlines has been in the title. Just for sake of example, Wrong Turn 5 from 2012 is Wrong Turn 5 Bloodlines. Hellraiser Bloodline in 1996. The newest Pet Sematary film from 2023, that was Pet Sematary Bloodlines. We even had Tremors 5 Bloodlines. I just think of these things. I can't really fault them for that. But you might as well think of the word final as well. Well, it was always in the title. I tempted to say Final Chapter from Jason and The Final Friday. Well, here we go. This won't be the final thing that I say. Moving on. And I do have to get serious for just a moment. This film also showcases the final performance of the recurring character, William Bloodworth, with Tony Todd. And I did have the chance to meet Tony Todd at our Monster Mania in 2018. I may have told the story before, but as it goes, I had a photo op with the Candyman in costume with the hook, the fur jacket, and everything. And I was rushing up the stairs to try to meet Kane Hodder, who plays Jason, actually, and he accidentally knocked me up or down the stairs, however it is that you want to think about it. And he's like, oh man, I'm sorry. And when I got to meet him just a few hours later, he remembered that and he gave me a free photo because he felt so bad about it. He was just the nicest man. And I also did get to meet Devin Sawa, who was in the original Final Destination. And he was cool as hell too. So you never know how these films are going to connect people to the actors that portray these characters that we all identify with. And I just wanted to share that with you. Just a couple of other facts to get out of the way. This film was made by New Line Cinema, the house that Freddie built. I just love seeing that. This was distributed by Warner Brothers. This film was directed by Zach Lipovitsky and Adam Stein. Screenplay by Guy Busick, Laurie Evans Taylor. Story by John Watts, Guy Busick, Laurie Evans Taylor. And this is starring Caitlin Santawana. She played an excellent main cast member, who her name was Stephanie, and she's the one that has the premonitions in this film about death. Tio Briones, Richard Harmon, Owen Patrick Joyner, Anna Lore, Breck Basinger, and as we mentioned, the final performance dedicated to Tony Todd. So these films have always scared me because, like I said, it's not a creature, it's death itself. And this film has one of the scariest, most frightening openings that I've seen in a long time. They take you back to 1968. There is a very high building called the Skyview. Just looking at this thing, imagine if there was a restaurant that was as high as, I don't know, maybe the Eiffel Tower or the Statue of Liberty. Very big spoiler alert if anybody has fear of heights. And you get to see this incredible scene of what happens with just an innocent penny. And all that I'm going to tell you is that they're listening to the song, "You Know You Make Me Want to Shout," and there's a glass floor. And when they stomp, you might be able to imagine what happens next. The gore and the carnage, and seeing this in row J of an IMAX theater really makes you feel like you're in the experience. Really, really frightening stuff, because as many of us know, in the Final Destination films, anything can kill you. and you're always on edge. You're always just a little bit out of your seat, and feeling that feeling really paints the whole atmosphere of what's to come. And that's what some of these audience members, including myself, kind of live for. You know, you sort of want to be uncomfortable, but being safe at the same time that you're in your seat. But it sure makes you think. And in a very interesting way, it does try to loosely bridge the gap to the previous Final Destination movies, as that Skyview scene was in 1968. That scene had a main character named Iris. Iris is the grandmother of Stephanie. Stephanie is the main character that is a college student that has the premonitions that she knows the order of which her family is going to die. Well, her grandmother, Iris, not only had the premonitions, but she had a book that showed some of the previous kills from the other movies, including the dreaded log truck. Oh, yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen these films, and that book really does help to jog your memory. As a matter of fact, I'm not even so certain I've seen the last one. I certainly do remember parts 1, 2, and 3 pretty well. The roller coaster one, especially, which is part 3. And, you know, seeing this in an IMAX presentation with the sounds and the music really made it quite the enriching experience for me. But I even think when this comes out in streaming or Blu-ray, and this was originally supposed to come out as an HBO Max movie, I'm sure glad that the movies are doing better nowadays that this did come out theatrically, because it is absolutely one of the best ones in recent memory. I'm going to absolutely have to go back and see the other ones at some point again. I really love how no scene is not unnecessary. Every single scene leads to something. It really plays with you, the way that the music even creeps up, the way that the camera kind of zooms into something as innocent as a vending machine that has snacks that can kill you, from a hose that fills up with water, from if you have a bar in your backyard and you drop a piece of glass and it's mixed with the ice. Oh man, they really kept you guessing there. And one of my favorite characters, who is played by Richard Harmon, Eric. Huh, this is a pretty cool dude. He's got some piercings, some tattoos, doesn't really give a crap about too much. They kept playing with you so much about the piercings that he had. And let's just say that he has a plan on maybe how to go and cheat death. But can any of us? That's something that really made you think. Graphically, emotionally, visually, this film really is appealing. I think that you're all going to really enjoy this one. If you are a fan of the series, this is absolutely one of the best entries in it. I do also want to say that there is no post-credit scene, so if you are waiting around for that, believe it or not, the animated credits with the penny itself is a pretty fun watch, actually. I did enjoy that. I think that the way that this movie ends was also very, very fitting. Certainly not going to give that away. So it's definitely something that I think that you should check out. This film, for me, is easily a 4 out of 5 graves. I really did enjoy it, and I sure hope that you guys too. Will Final Destination Bloodlines be the final of the Final Destination films? Not really sure. That's really anybody's guess. But I do want to say, much like in the Saw series, it does teach you to appreciate life. Because after all, life is for the living, and that's why I want each of you to go enjoy yourselves and have a good horror time. So, Edge Grave out. Thank you to Bill for checking this one out with me, and back to you, Ghost Joe. Stay groovy.
So now it's time for the main event, my interview with the awesome Sarah and Rob of the Get Haunted Paranormal Network. Don't forget to check out the show notes for all of their socials. And while you're at it, check out all of the awesome podcasts that run on their sites as well, because you will not be disappointed. There's something there for everybody, and some amazing people are behind the team. And yeah, just support, support, support. That's how we keep making content, and that's what keeps us motivated to make content. So on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
On this very special episode of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, I speak with the founders of the Get Haunted Paranormal Podcast Network, and new friends Sarah and Rob. They, along with their amazing team, bring a slew of entertaining paranormal programming, as well as host ghost investigation tours around the country. So what's going on, guys? How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. You good, Rob? You look a little... Oh, okay.
It's
okay.
Just
I didn't
hair,
know if you were
bro.
Frozen.
I
you look kind of frozen there.
Because I've been wearing a hat all day. And this is an audio only. And Joe?
Yeah, that's true.
There's no
that's
judging true. My hair, dude, tonight.
No, I wasn't judging your hair. I wasn't judging your hair. Nope, 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 nope. I don't want to get canceled. So let's get into this. So, Sarah, let's start with you though. Yeah. What interested you? What initiated your interest in the paranormal?
Well, that's a really good question that I never really answer because I'm not, you know, I think it's just who I am. I think it was just something that I had a mother who was very much into more of that astrology and psychic mediums and angel numbers, right? And numerology. And then I have two older sisters who are 10 and 7 years older, who were always into horror movies. So, right, growing up in the 70s and 80s, sort of, you know, being like the little one that was always in the rooms while they were watching those movies, I think it was just a natural progression to be like, it's just normal to be into scary stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm 44. So I was watching Friday the 13th part 6 when I was 8 years old and 7 years old. And, you know, I grew up on horror stuff. So
yeah.
I guess it's kind of a rite of passage, I guess.
It is.
You know,
but, it is.
How about you, Rob? How did you get started?
So, you know, it was always an interest, right? The spooky stuff, the scary stories growing up. My aunt had an antique shop upstate New York, and we'd go up there every summer. And, you know, the story was that her shop was haunted. So she'd sit and read Fate magazine with me and all these fun things. But I never really went out looking for it. You know, in 2005, my daughter was born and my dad was living with us. He was sick. So they became, and that was his first and only granddaughter. So they became really, really close. And 3 years later, you know, she was about 2.5 when my dad passed away. Really strange things started happening, especially around her. You know, initially it was, you know, her talking to him, like she knew he passed away and we didn't even tell her, excuse me. But then it became more and more, right? She would draw these weird pictures. She would talk to him, play with him. Then we started experiencing things in the house. Again, especially around Ava. And that really got me. It had me spooked at first, but I became very interested in trying to figure out what the heck was happening. Started watching, you know, the ghost shows religiously. And then I tried to find a team, which was very, very challenging, which kind of led to, you know, the concept and the birth of Get Haunted eventually. But I did. I went out, started exploring, and I had a very scientific day job, right? I had this weird technical / marketing role for a big Japanese technology company. And I did spend almost every day, you know, analyzing things and then proving to the rest of the world why something worked or did not work. But when I went out there and started doing this, I was getting things that I just couldn't prove. And there was no rational explanation for some of the things that, you know, I was witnessing or recording on the cameras. Back then, I really was into the equipment and trying to document it. And that was it. Like, I just got the bug, you know, I got the bug and started going as much as I could. Eventually landed in a spot that allowed me to do public events for another company. And ultimately, that ended up turning into me kicking off Get Haunted, mostly as a merch company in 2019. And then in 2021, you know, I hadn't been doing public events. And I was like, well, we're gonna launch this thing and do public events as well. So that's kind of the genesis of the Get Haunted vision, or what led me to finally kicking Get Haunted off in 19.
So how did that get started? That was actually my next question. How did Get Haunted get started? How'd you hook up with Sarah, right, and who else is part of the team?
Great segue. So, you know, I worked for, it was really a volunteer position, but I was with a, at the time, it was probably the largest public event company in the company. And I was there for a few years and started out as, you know, an investigator, and eventually ended up having kind of, you know, the Northeast as my region. And I did public events literally all over the country, from the Queen Mary to the Conjuring House. Once we landed the Conjuring House, I ended up having to be there quite a bit. And from there, things got really strange for me on the personal side and paranormally. But I also noticed a shift in maybe what some would say would be the ethics of that company that I was working for. And I didn't like it. So eventually, I left. I finally left in 2019. I had kind of taken a break from doing public events because of the paranormal things that were happening around me, to me, at home, to my kid, around my kid. Even my ex-wife started to witness these things. And it did. It scared me pretty much big time. So I took a break from investigating. I was doing more, you know, like back end kind of work. Once I finally was like, you know what, I've had enough. I didn't like the way some things were going. I handed in my keys, for lack of a better term, and I took a break. I later, probably about a week later, was like, you know what, I need to make money here. So I kicked off the merch side of it and was providing merch to some people. And then after a few months of kind of getting over the paranormal scare, I was like, I missed public events. I missed being out there with, you know, new people, old people, you know, seasoned people. And that reaction when we do get something, right? That, especially for the new people.
Right.
So it was Halloween of 2021. And it really wasn't the plan, but I was down at Selma Mansion and I was like, you know what? We're going to try this. We're going to kick this sucker off. So I launched public events, somehow managed to get about 15 events lined up for the following year. But that was October 31st of 2021, right? Where we went from just merch to hosting events. At the time, you know, I had Bill Bryan. You've met Bill, I believe. Bill Bryan was helping me and Tanya. And months prior, Bill had set up a podcast interview with Sarah in December. I don't even know when it was originally slated, but months prior, Bill had set that up. Now that we were doing things together, he's like, hey, I want you to come on this show, Paranormally Blonde, in December. And I really, believe it or not, Joe, I didn't really like going on podcasts or being on the air, right? So I was dreading right. it. I really didn't want to do it. And Bill can attest to that. But on 12/22 of 2021, I went on Sarah's show, Paranormally Blonde, and we essentially pitched what the vision and the mission of Get Haunted always has been. And for me, you know, what I had witnessed at the prior place. And what I was witnessing in the field was that, you know, there are a lot of very talented and skilled people out there, all working mostly in silos, right? There's, because it is hard to find a team that would accept you if you didn't have enough equipment or enough time in the field or a certain level of expertise and whatever. And I struggled with that. So I wanted a place where, or a community where people would work together and those silos would start to come down, hopefully, or, you know, best case scenario, the silo gets bigger and you let more people in. Wanted a place where people could share their thoughts and their ideas and their evidence without being criticized or belittled or made fun of. So that was kind of the notion. I had no idea how to execute that the right way, at least. Maybe it was just meant to be, but I start pitching this idea and this project to Sarah on her show, and it resonated. And Sarah can kind of take it from there. I believe she's frozen for a moment here. But
no, I see her. She's moving from over here.
Oh, okay, good. So Sarah,
there she is.
Explain to everybody how amazing my idea was.
Yeah, well, I think that's something, Joe, and you might even have experienced this, you know, when you start to sort of traverse into the paranormal world, right? People are a little, they're not as open sometimes to allow you to come in and enjoy what they've already created. So when Rob showed up on the show and he started talking about it, I mean, the whole time, and it's funny, I've made him rewatch that very first time we meet and where it's clicking. And I was just like, oh my God, like I just wanted more. I wanted to be a part of it. I got it. I got what he was saying about working together as a community and sharing ideas and having sort of one, like a one-stop shop, you know, where you could go in and talk to people. It really resonated to the point that after the show, I joined the network immediately and immediately started to find guests for my show. And that's really what I had used the platform for. So to me, it was an extension sort of what Paranormally Blonde has always been about, which has always been about giving everybody a voice. Yeah, it was just one of those things where it's like, I got to be a part of this network. So really, it was a couple months that I was really just somebody in the network. I wasn't a real big part of Get Haunted yet. I just was actually using their services.
So who's actually like, who are the core team members now? I know I met a bunch of them at the Mid-Orange thing, but you know, a few of them.
Oh gosh, we just had a crew meeting too.
Yeah, we did. So I'll start. I'll rattle off two or three, and then you can throw the others in. It's late, Joe. You can't ask like complicated questions.
Yeah, no, I understand.
So
yeah.
Julie and Terry are sort of our, they're sort of our handlers, right? They and project managers and whatnot. But we have Danny. You know, you met Danny. So Julie, Terry, Danny. Mm-hmm. Are sort of the, what I would consider, if you want to call them the management team within the Get Haunted universe.
And with Lori, we also have Lori who, so we kind of have like, we kind of structured it with, I think with Rob's years in the corporate world, right? To be able to structure it. We have somebody that sort of handles the Paracon situation, projects, right? Crew handle. So yeah, me, Rob, Danny, Julie, Terry, Lori, are sort of the management, as far as keeping the daily tasks and the bigger projects sort of, together. And then we have crew, all over the place, Kaylee, Marianne, Bridget, Brandy, and, you know, and then mercs come in, right? We have a lot of mercs that also, those are teams within the community that really do embody what the mission of Get Haunted is. So then they also work under our umbrella, which those are probably people you know as well, like two brothers, Extreme Mike and Adam, and Joe B and Dom. That's next of kin. Bill and Tanya, obviously, Empty Casket Paranormal. So, you know, it's really just about people who can sort of pay it forward to the community. They get it, right? They understand what the network is used for, and then they go out and they make connections, and you just hope that it grows.
Gotcha. And how many, at this point, like how many podcasts do you guys have under the umbrella at this point?
I think we're at about 20. I know a couple shows have taken a break, but we do have a couple shows that are in the wait to join the program. And really in the podcast program was something that I had brought to Rob and just had asked, like, I love what we're doing in the paranormal, but now I would love to extend that to the specific genre in the paranormal, which is the podcaster world. And doing podcasts myself, this was not something that I was asked to do this about 5 years ago. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. Right. So to be able to offer where hosts can help host, and then we have this amazing platform to sort of bounce off of. You know, it really was never about collecting the most shows, right? I think there are networks out there. There's great networks out there, KGRA, right? There's all these great things that, you know, people can join. But we weren't meant to be that. We were really about networking and cross-promoting each other. So it wasn't about collecting as many shows as we can. It was about finding the right shows that wanted to come in and work together.
Right, of course. So as far as the investigation stuff went, what was the first location that you guys had done like an investigation event? What was the first place that you guys did that?
The very first was White Hill Mansion in Fieldsboro, New Jersey.
Okay.
You know, and having had, God, probably 100 under my belt, you know, with the other place and White Hill being so close, and I'd been there so many times, it just made sense because I knew the place, it was close enough. I figured we could probably sell enough tickets to make it worth it. And we did that very first year. I think people were hungry for something different. And you know, the market wasn't quite so saturated with quote unquote event companies, which people label us as. It's not what we are, but we do carry that label with certain folks. But yeah, White Hill, which is still, you know, one of my favorite places. There's just always something going on there. And, you know, it's sort of like a second home for me.
Yeah, I'm actually hopefully going to be going to the August 23rd event over there. I'm trying to get my buddy Dave, who does the horror reviews, I'm trying to get him to go there as well, because he lives in Woodbridge, New Jersey. And my dad actually wants to go too. He's in Staten Island. So I'm like,
aww,
Dad, you know, come along, you know, like, you know, plus I could sleep at his house because Staten Island's pretty close to over there. It's much closer than where I'm at.
So yeah.
It works out in a few ways, you know.
You know, Woodbridge is not far. I grew up in Edison, actually right next door to Woodbridge. So that's an easy drive for him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's like, yeah, he goes, I want to meet the Get Haunted people. I want to meet them, you know. Yeah. Yeah, no, he's a good guy. I mean, I've known him since second grade. And he's the one who, I mean, me and him used to watch all the horror movies. We used to Blockbuster Fridays. We'd go to Blockbuster like, oh, that looks like a cool cover, and pick that up. And
Isn't that the best? Those were the best.
You know, we picked up, I remember the one that we really picked up that we were like, what the hell did we just watch, was Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, God.
If you remember the ending of Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
You know, with
that
Angela.
That one.
We're like, all right, what just happened? You know, like, what did we just rent?
Yeah. Cult classic.
Right. And then we were also, you know, we're big into heavy metal and hard rock and stuff. And
we were going to see Broadway plays that had Sebastian Bach in them. And Sebastian Bach was going to be in Rocky Horror Picture Show. So we're like, oh, we never seen it. Let's rent Rocky Horror Picture Show. And we're like, what's going on? You know, why would Tim Curry be in something like this? The dude from Clue is in this movie?
Yeah, I've never, disclaimer, I've never watched that. Never watched Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I'll tell you, it's actually a really fun movie when you get past what it's about and how kind of strange it is. But it's actually a really fun movie. And the soundtrack is amazing, actually. The soundtrack is really, really good.
We'll have to make that a Get Haunted event.
I'll tell you, like, that's a big thing, too. A lot of people do that around Halloween. They'll have, like, a screen set up. And, like, I don't know if you ever seen, they used to have, like, audience participation. Mm-hmm. With that movie, people would throw popcorn in certain parts and scream out certain things. And, you know, I've never been to one, but it seems like a pretty fun time, actually.
Yeah.
So as far as the places that, I mean, you've investigated, whether it was with Get Haunted or on your own, what has been like the most active in terms of paranormal activity?
I know, Rob, you've had such, I think for you, the locations, because you have really reached from coast to coast, and some of your stories, I think you've had really big experiences that you could rattle off a couple locations.
Yeah, I could probably list out two or three that, you know, are almost never a disappointment, right? And that would be, I would have to say, White Hill Mansion being one. Mid Orange Correctional, I don't think, and I've been there at least 20 times, I don't think there's ever been one night where somebody didn't walk away going, I don't understand what just happened. I'll give two more. Then there's Missouri State Penitentiary, which there is no really great description for it. It's this crazy combination of menacing and amazing and awe-inspiring and then scary and then beautiful. It's just, it's everything all wrapped up in four incredibly wild buildings. And then the other one, and most people will never go there, but it's so good that I have convince Sarah that one day we will get our butts out to Deer Lodge, Montana, and that would be Old Montana Prison. That place is wickedly cool and scary. So
three out of four are prison/correctional facilities.
You know, it's funny because when I was working for that other place and I would help them with analytics, you know, I had broken out locations into what type of location they were, whether it was a prison or, you know, a school or a mansion. And prisons were always kind of right at the top of the list.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, people say you see spirits or, you know, spirits are there, you know, a lot of times due to, you know, they're not at rest or they're, you know, they're not at rest. So I guess a prison and a hospital would probably be two of the biggest places. You know, that's why I think cemeteries, you know, there's a lot of people buried there, but they're at rest there. You know, they're at peace there, you know, for the most part. So I feel like, I definitely get that too. Like prisons, hospitals, you know.
You kind of bring up a good point, Joe. Like, you know, when you think about the cemetery situation, when you listen to investigators speak about why something might be haunted, we always hear about the energy left behind, the traumatic situation that happened, or especially in a prison, right? Like the stressors and the fights, the big emotion, right? Hospitals, the big emotion, life, new life, death. But at a cemetery, it's not like something tragic has happened there. That's your final resting place. Right. So what energy is really imprinting there, if you go on what a lot of investigators talk about, right? Like what's replaying there? I mean, we, the living, if we go there, probably imprint our emotions and our energy there as we visit sure. our loved ones. But for somebody that's already passed, are they really roaming a cemetery? I don't know if that really fits.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I've had an experience at a cemetery one time where I was walking through one, and I had the same experience at Mid-Orange Correctional Facility with footsteps walking right behind me, you know, and I ran the hell back into the car when I heard that, you know, not at Mid-Orange. I went all CO and I'm like, get in front of me, you know, you're not supposed to walk behind me. And it stopped after I did that. I got all corrections on them, but that's, you know, cool. I figured let me try that out. It seemed to work, but I definitely had that experience over there, which was pretty awesome. What would you guys say in investigations is like the most invaluable piece of equipment?
Oh, that is so like you. That's a tough. I think that's a tough one to answer because one, every single person is so different. And two, every single location is so different. So you just don't know what you're going to need. But first and foremost, I would think, and I think Rob and I probably agree on this, is really getting yourself in tuned with a location, right? Using yourself first. I mean, the equipment really should validate, I think, what you're feeling or what you're sensing or what you're knowing, right? That's really what the equipment there is there for. But if I were going to use an actual piece of equipment, something technical that somebody made, as long as it plays music or a sound like that, like a bell or music, I'm all about that right now. That's my jam.
Yeah. Sarah likes the audio cues, right? For me and Joe, you got to witness my favorite piece of equipment as a voice recorder, for a lot of reasons, right? One is you're getting some kind of information from it, hopefully, when you capture something, right? The bells and the whistles and the lights are all cool, but you're not really learning anything. Sometimes with EVP recordings, you know, we get like legit answers or information that we can pull a story out of. Plus it's just cool to hear someone, wherever they are, whatever they are, that is not with us physically present speaking. It's amazing to me. So for me, it's the voice recorder.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to name drop him again, because I think that this was awesome. When I had the interview with Tony Rathman, that thing that he's doing is phenomenal. I mean, it's incredible, because you could hear the inflection in people's voices and the emotion. You could hear them talking to each other. Like, I've never heard anything like that before in my life. You know, I was taken aback by it. Like when I was listening to it, I said, that's amazing. You know, that's all I kept saying. I was like, that's incredible. That's, I've never heard anything like that before in my life. But that was actually the Mid-Orange thing was definitely, I had told you, that's the first investigation, you know, event type thing I've ever been on. I did a thing at Queen Mary when I was out there 12, 13 years ago. But to be honest with you, there was like 20 people walking around together. You're not really, I mean, I like how you guys do it with the groups, you know, because it's not, if it's too many people, I feel like there's, you might not get anything, you know, I feel like there's too much going on, or at least if there is something going on, there's too many people, there's too much going on for people to even notice.
It can be tough. And some of our events are a little bit larger, right? And that's where, you know, we have set a standard with everybody that leads a group, you know, and it may sound harsh, but, you know, for me especially, like, I'm rough. The Jersey comes out in me. If you're disruptive during a session, like, I'm going to ask you one time, and you got to stop. What people fail to realize is, you know, when you've got 11, 12 other people sitting there, they also paid money to be there. And they are trying to enjoy their time. So, you know, and it is very much a communal thing. you know, and we all want to experience it. So if you don't know how to behave, don't buy a ticket, or buy a ticket and get ejected. There's really only a couple options there. So it is possible, right? And I know there's a very popular concept that, you know, public investigations, you can't get anything. And that's usually comes from people that haven't been out with us. So yeah, I challenged that theory in some place. Like at Missouri, we had 58 people, I think. Battleship, we had 58, and we pulled it off. It was really good. Go ahead, Sarah. I didn't mean to cut you.
Well, I do want to say something though about the groups, because Joe, like what you mentioned, the beautiful thing when we break up, and a lot of times it will be three groups, and we do three rotations. I think when you get people in groups, and you know, we sort of handpick them right then and there, right? Sometimes it just happens that people are. There might be 8 to 10 people that are kind of there together. They know each other. But when we sort of handpick those groups, or we sort of feel those groups out, there is something about working, you know, when you can bust each other, you know, bust the groups up, you kind of get this cool work of energy, like the personality types, right? And if you're all together, like when you were walking the Queen Mary, when you're all walking together through, you're just really not sure where it's coming from. So, you know, when we bust up into three groups and then we come back together after a session to talk about what's happening, it's cool to sort of see like, okay, so this group over here isn't getting anything. Why is that? Right. Like what's going on in that group that they're not really connecting, or this group is really getting some cool stuff. Like, what is it about this group? And I think that that is a really important piece to investigating and to what we do in the paranormal in general, is to understand what we're all bringing. And, you know, if you're all together, how are you going to weed that out? Like, how are you going to even know where to start? You know? Right. So I like the groups for that reason.
Yeah. And it's also one of the reasons why we like to rotate them through the different leads, right? Because Sarah and I investigate very differently than Bill and Tanya, very differently than Lori. So everybody's got their own unique flavor and style that they bring to it. And some of them are very equipment centric. Some are spiritual, some are hybrid, you know, so giving people, you know, different flavors on that menu, when it's time to break off and it's time to go on free roam, you know, they can ask us to come with them, or they might walk away with something, a new technique or a new style that they just didn't think really would work for them. So it's kind of cool when you watch that all together. But Sarah's absolutely right. And you know, every now and then you'll notice like the one group that's like, yeah, we got nothing, right? But you also see how those people are investigating, right? Because I get to walk around and watch half the time. And I'm like, that energy just wasn't there. It's why I'm like, I yell at people in the beginning. I'm like, come on, it's about you tonight. So yeah, it's a big factor.
Here's the question I guess everybody asks, and everybody pretty much knows what they're going to say off the top of their head. But if money was no object, which haunted location would you love to investigate or have an event at, if you could?
Well, you know what my answer is, and it drives you insane. Because to me, it's never been about the location. It's really about who I get to go with. Because I think any location can sort of turn into this very unique experience when you're with the right people. I've been to some of the most popular locations that people, you know, have made very big claims at and walked out of there going, eh. So I think for me, it's really about being with certain people. I don't, except I did say the other night, maybe like if I could go and do the catacombs, right, in France or, you know, Paris or something, maybe something like that. Right. But I don't really have one specific location. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, look, you know, I was in Toledo, Spain, a bunch of years back, you know, for my corporate job. And there was just something about it, right? It's this 15th century. Everything there is old and it's beautiful. And the Knights Templar, you know, they still have the brass rings where they would tie their horses off. And witchcraft was a big thing there. it just felt haunted. And I'm curious to see, you know, what it would be to investigate in Spain and what kind of EVPs would we get. And we'll so for me, I would say let's fuel the jet and get over to Toledo. And the food is amazing. So you really can't beat it.
What are your thoughts on like UFOs, aliens, cryptids, and other paranormal phenomena? Like, do you guys subscribe to any of those as well? Or
I think you kind of have to. I think for me, probably the last 3 years being a part of Get Haunted and meeting the many different, honestly, all the different fibers that are in the Get Haunted community, you know, quilt, dare I say, like, you can't dismiss these experiences that people talk about when it comes to cryptid, Sasquatch, UFO, CE5. So I, you know, maybe where I never disbelieved anything, but I don't think that I gave it much thought, I would say in the last 3 years, it's definitely been, that world's opened up for me. And I don't know that I believe, I don't think that I think of it in the same terms anymore. So we call it Bigfoot, we call it alien or UFO or CE5. But I think now I sort of view all these experiences in a much different lens. And maybe it's more of a spiritual thing, interdimensional, than it is, you know, a flesh and blood, you know, Bigfoot walking out there or a little green dude coming down from space. You know, I think it's
right.
This consciousness and these, you know, connections with our soul, you know, I definitely would say I believe in that stuff now.
How about you, Rob? What's your,
Yeah, I mean, essentially the same answer. I wasn't closed off to it at all. In fact, you know, I remember as a kid, Close Encounters, watching that. And Edison, you know, where I grew up, Edison, New Jersey, had a pretty big UFO incident one night. And my father got to witness it along with one of our neighbors. So, you know, I was open to the notion of it, more so the UFO piece than the Bigfoot piece. I have this weird fear of primates, right? I don't like gorillas. So Bigfoot for me was never anything I really wanted to run into or even believe in. But it really wasn't until, you know, Get Haunted and linking up with Denise, Ernie, Todd and Leanne, Squatchman, that they sort of convinced me that it wasn't going to be scary. Like, I was afraid of getting killed by Bigfoot. But, you know, once that first, and it's almost like it chooses you. Like, when the time is right, it's time. And you got to be with the right people. And apparently the place isn't quite as important. But that first experience got me going, all right, not sure what I just saw, but And then the big experience at Fort Duffield, and it was like, I was like, there's no denying what myself and 19 other people saw that night.
Right.
And yeah, like Sarah said, I do think now that they're interdimensional, and I'm not sure how different they are than what we all, you know, talk about with the classic ghost stories, right? Like, to shut one of these concepts down or these notions down and accept another, to me, seems silly.
You know, and it would make a lot of sense too if they are interdimensional, because I mean, we've never found a dead Bigfoot. You know, there's never, but I feel like there's too many claims of seeing him for it to be fake. Like, okay, you could say, all right, the Loch Ness Monster, okay, not. There hasn't been hundreds, thousands, millions of people that have seen the Loch Ness Monster, you know, plus the first guy had said, oh yeah, you know, I faked it, you know, but, you know, Bigfoot is just too out there, you know, and at the same time too, you were saying about interdimensional, you know, a lot of people, from what I've read up and talked to a lot of people about, there's been a lot of times when they've seen Bigfoot, they've seen a UFO, or vice versa. They've seen a UFO and seen Bigfoot at the same time. So you know, that there has to be some kind of correlation there, you know?
Well, yeah, it's why we kind of started up the trifecta event last year. We did that in the Hudson Valley in New York, which is famous for UFOs. We brought Ronnie LeBlanc in, and we did a two-day event where it was a ghost hunt and a CE5 experiment and a Bigfoot squatching, you know, day. And dude, like, I'm not joking. When we did the CE5 thing, you know, Bill, Brian, there were a bunch of us sitting around. these lights showed up and it was like, what? Like, that worked. Like, it literally worked. We could not believe it. The next day, you know, we went on a squatch walk with Ronnie LeBlanc and we believe we got a tree knock there. We found some weird structures in the woods. So is this stuff, like, it might be more common than we think. And to your point, right, even if, you know, with the millions of Bigfoot sightings, if 99.8% are misidentifications or nonsense or made up, what about the 0.2%, right? Like, there is something.
Right. There's something. Right. There's truth behind everything, you know. There's always truth behind something. Now, do you guys? I know you just mentioned that, but do you guys ever put on events like CE5 or cryptid investigation events or anything?
Yeah, we did.
You did do
it. Yeah, we're
getting into
the first
it.
Trifecta last
we're
year.
We're getting into it.
And then May 31st of this year, we're doing Trifecta 2.0 down in Kentucky, West Point, Kentucky. We're nice. Staying with. You know, there were different tiered packages, but we're doing the ghostly piece, right? Fort Duffield, which is right near Denise and Ernie's house, and they manage it, has it all. They have the sightings of Bigfoot. They have the UFO sightings and they have ghosts. So we're going to do that. It's going to be CE5, squatching and ghosting.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, before I forget this one, because this kind of goes with one of the questions before, but you had said that for a while you were doing the ghost hunting thing and then you had to take a break from it, but then you got back into it. What changed now? Like, do you say anything like after your investigations? Or like, I know for me, when I got in the car after the Mid-Orange Correctional Facility, I got in my car and I said, listen, if anything is following me, stay here on the property. I don't want you following me home. You're not welcome here. You know, just stay where you're at. You know, what do you do to protect yourself, basically? So,
you know, a lot of people ask that. And the whole reason I ever even, you know, talked to Sarah again was because I was in a really, really bad place. And when I say talk, it's not the whole reason, but since we had chit-chatted once or twice on the network, in the couple months in between. But she taught me a lot about myself on that day and the day I reached out to her for help. What I've learned since, right, is like for me personally, and I believe this is a very personal, protection is a very personal thing, right? And I believe it has to really mean something to you for it to work. It just does. So for me personally, I do not feel the need to say it out loud. I believe that when I do get in the car or I'm walking off a property, if I'm just saying, hey, in my own head, in my own space, right? Enough. Like, I'm going home. You're going to leave me alone. We just had an incident here the other night where I did end up speaking out loud, but I handle things much, much differently now that I've seen things that rattled me, that shook my core. I've experienced things, but I have stopped giving those things that much power over me. So if I can internalize it and believe it, truly believe it, everything seems way, way less scary. But I do put the thought out there. I put the intent and, that's what works for me. I'm not saying that works for everybody. What about Sarah Jane?
I don't, you know, I think that is something, and I don't down people for doing it. I don't judge somebody for walking off a property and saying, oh my gosh, if something is following me, no, you cannot come here.
It's my email, ghostjoeny@gmail.com.
It has not been my experience in the amount of time that I've been in and out of the field to have that feeling. But I think that everybody comes at it very differently. I practice Reiki, you know, in my own time. I study Buddhist lessons. So I think it depends what we're doing in our daily life. And then if you're going to a location.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
I can see where
have a great week.
The prayers of
and
protection
I'll see you
or
next time.
A ritualistic
later.
Sort of thing becomes that. But I think people who, you know, it's just your practice, right? It's whatever you practice. And I just haven't needed to practice it yet, I should state, coming out of a location or an investigation.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, like when I've had things happen when I'm doing my podcast, I told you guys when we first started talking,
yeah.
I've had knocks on my doors and all sorts of things. And I just kind of like, all right, stop it. You know, just like kind of like telling my kid, like, all right, just cut it out. Cut it out. I know you're there.
Yeah.
Just cut it out.
Yeah. Look, most cases for me, I just think it and feel it. You know, the other night, things got a little dicey here with some things. And I did. I was out loud, like, yo, knock it off. Like, and you're out. Like, you're out. And it got a little funky here. But yeah, for me, you know, the out loud spoken word piece usually. If you hear me saying it, it means things are getting weird.
It's pretty bad.
So what are your plans and hopes for the Get Haunted Network? What do you hope to accomplish with it or, you know, moving forward?
It's a really good question. You know, do you want to go, Sarah, or do you want me to?
Well, I think that's such a great question because when you're the founder of Get Haunted, right? So you had this beautiful mission and you created Get Haunted and then I came in and took it over. So I think that the two, you know, the two perspectives might be a little different, but have I asked you that lately? Like, how do you see it?
Yeah, look, so where we are today, right? Is nothing. I ever could have imagined it turning into, right? And it's not like we're making a shit ton of money. Am I allowed to curse? We're not making a whole ton of money and all that. We're not rich and famous, but and I can admit and will forever admit, right? You know, I had this thought in my head of what I wanted it to be, but there, for me personally, I don't think I ever could have executed it the way Sarah has, right? And that's especially around the community part. And she did take over because a couple months in, she sent me an email and she was like, hey, you suck at social media. And I was like, you're right. So her first real mission here was social media manager. And she grew this network into like a beast. But I sit back today, right? And we're watching books being published and our names coming out of people's mouths, good and bad in some cases, but from people that we just probably never would have expected, giving lectures, being invited to speak at different places. And it's watching honestly one of the most gratifying pieces is watching the offshoots grow, right? Next of Kin Paranormal, watching the paranormal podcast program bring in numbers that like a lot of people wish they could get on certain shows. Watching the teams collaborate, watching a Paracon that Sarah's helping with, you know, flourish. You know, those things really for me far surpass anything I ever thought this could be, right? So we're on year four. Are we on four yet? Oh my god. And it's a struggle. Like that's what a lot of people don't understand. I have literally put my entire life savings into this and a lot of trust, and it's a huge, huge gamble, and it's a very challenging market. And, you know, being mostly based off of social media makes it even that much more challenging. But it's when we meet the Joe P's, and when we meet the Joe B's, and we, you know, sit with people that listen to stories or tell stories, or something clicks for them, and they're like, holy crap, like this makes sense. Like, so for me, I feel like we've already accomplished everything I could have ever imagined. And I know, you know, I could never have done this alone. I knew it. It's why I forced Sarah, you know, a little while into it. I was like, hey, like, I need you to help me run this thing, right? Because I'm still an Edison, New Jersey dude, right? And I don't know how to talk to the masses the way Sarah does, right? And she brings this element to it that makes it very, very human, even digitally speaking on Facebook or social media, which is not easy. It's not an easy task, right? It's very hard for me to type something out that would make someone go, well, goddamn, I feel very welcome here. It's just, it's not who I am. And right. It's something that she's exceptionally talented at, along with bringing a fair amount of our best ideas to the table, you know, when it comes to events or different things that we've pulled off over the past few years. A lot of them came from Sarah. So, yeah, man, like, so we've done more than I ever thought we could do. What I would like to see moving forward is for some of the larger groups or entities to stop being over in their corner, and let's all kind of work together and build something really, really, really big and really cool. And we're slowly chipping away at some of that. What about you, Sarah?
Well, I think that when you look at Get Haunted itself, the brand, right? It really, to me, how I see this in the future is that it becomes a living entity, right? That the community itself becomes community. And, you know, it's paid forward. We laid out the groundwork, and, you know, you example what you want to see, what you haven't seen, what you wish you had the opportunities. We try to open all those doors for everybody. Sometimes we get those doors slammed on us, but, you know, we open up all those doors, and who wants to walk through them? We welcome them through those. So I would like to see Get Haunted really be a living entity on its own, where that brand itself, right? He did such a beautiful job coming up with Get Haunted. And it really, when you wear that name, it really, you know, some things you see, you know, some brands, they're beautiful. The logos are beautiful, but they're very specific, right? They're very like to that person or to that team, where Get Haunted is sort of this beautiful blanket brand that can land with anybody. Get Haunted could be so much emotion, right? It could be spiritual. It can be your trauma. It's all this stuff that sort of makes the paranormal what the paranormal is. So I really want to see it where, you know, we can go and do our things as well and really work on investigating for ourselves and watching the community understand what it is to network, bring back real networking, not social media networking, but the actual living networking where we come together and, you know, Joe P's helping Sarah and Sarah's out there helping somebody else. And you know, we're, you know, introducing each other to people, and that's what it should be. So I guess Rob, you and I have very similar, but just, yeah, I think Get Haunted could really stand on its own. I really do.
Awesome. And what do you guys have coming up in the near future as far as events and stuff like that going on? What's in the near future? I know you said that one thing, you know, at the end of May, but what else you got?
Yeah, the trifecta. So this weekend we'll be at White Hill Mansion Paracon. The following weekend we're at the Convent
May 10th
Tattoo Shop.
Is that? May 10th, the Convent in New Jersey. May 31st through June 1st is Trifecta in West Point, Kentucky. June 21st is MSP, that is the book launch and investigation with Brian Paoni, who wrote the book, and also investigating with Get Haunted. June 28th, we have New Egypt Historical Museum. Another one, Joe, if you want to go to a great location, much like a White Hill,
you will
never be disappointed with New Egypt. The historical museum, it is amazing. We do have White Hill in August that you're going to on the 23rd, of course. We do have a couple new locations on the book that are in Ohio that we're making some decisions on right now. A junior high or a high school and a village. Those are out there. And of course, Mid-O will be coming up again in November. We've got some great things. We didn't go as heavy on events, as Rob mentioned. We're not an event company. Get Haunted is a network. The events are really a way for us to physically express the network with each and every person coming together, seasoned, you know, curious minds to the seasoned investigator coming together to look at these locations. But that's not our main focus. It really is to help find opportunities, help outfit teams with merchandise, help people find equipment, anything that you could need in your paranormal journey, if it's finding a psychic medium or, you know, there's so much to this. And we kind of want to be like the yellow pages, you know, we're kind of right there to help you find what you need.
Right. And how could someone find out more information about the network? Podcast.
Oh yeah. Well, you know,
events and stuff like
GetHaunted.com is a great place to go. Beautiful website. GetHaunted.com. Of course, another great way is the Get Haunted main page on Facebook. But if you really want some great, great interaction with the people of the entirety of the paranormal community, Get Haunted, the Get Haunted Network public page on Facebook is a great way to connect with people. Also Get Haunted Patreon. If you're interested, if you have a show, it is important to me that everybody has a voice. And I've been really proud of this program because there are people who really literally were guests on a show. And then they were like, wait, I think I want to do this. And they've done it. And I encourage them to do that because it's a beautiful way for them to express their experiences and their thoughts and theories. So just reach out to Sarah@gethaunted.com and we can talk about shows.
Awesome, awesome. I'm rocking the merch today, too.
You are. You look good. Looks good.
Still waiting on that hat, though.
I know. We do need to make more hats. Those things sell out.
I know. You and everybody else. I'm on it. Well, you know, my business partner uses all the manual labor.
Yeah, I do. I don't do any of that. He does all the merch.
Thank you guys so much for this. This was awesome. And, I appreciate everything you guys are doing for the community, too, because it's... You know, absolutely. I've actually been looking, you know, before I found you guys, I was looking for a while for podcast networks, for, you know, specifically mm-hmm. paranormal podcast networks. And it was kind of difficult to find. There were a couple out there, but, everybody was kind of difficult to find. I would send emails out and I could swear I talked to you guys at a Paracon too. At one time,
you might
probably
have.
Last year at some point, and then life got in the way. I work a million hours a week, so you know it wasn't until I finally reached out to you guys a few months back. I'm glad I did. You know, I love going on listening to all the podcasts and stuff, and it's very, very cool. You know,
well, you're a great addition because you add your shares on the shows and you are an amazing cross promoter. And that's what it's about. Like you get it. And we appreciate people like you that step up. So thank you so much.
Oh, of course. I mean, I started the podcast after listening to another podcast called Monsters Among Us. That's why I started.
Oh yeah.
And
it's a great one.
I loved that podcast because I was like, this is what I want to do. I want people to call in or people to leave voicemails and tell me their experiences. Like that's what I would love to do. And nobody ever calls. I don't understand. Like I've had this number for I had to make a fake voicemail of Beavis and Butthead, me doing the voice of Beavis and Butthead. Calling in saying about a paranormal experience because nobody else did.
I don't have this phone number. Where is this phone number, Joey? I could be.
Yeah, I'm always putting it up there.
It's on there. It's on his banner.
I might as well say it. It's 845-600-0744.
So this interview kind of ended a little bit abruptly. We kept talking for a while and I stopped it. I really should get into the practice of saying goodbye and having everybody say goodbye. But, you know, you win some, you lose some, you learn some stuff every day, right? So anyways, thank you to Sarah and Rob for the awesome interview. It was great learning more about the Get Haunted Network and your personal experiences with the paranormal, supernatural. And thank you everybody for listening. Have a great week and I'll see you next time. Later. Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen. Right.